मूकं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरी यत्कृपातहं वंदे श्रीगुरु दीनतारिणं परमानंदमाधवं श्रीचैतन्येश्वरं। सो वेलकम वंस अगेन। होप यू आर रेडी विद द बुक कैंटो 7 चैप्टर 2 टेक्स्ट 37। सो टिल नाउ वी हैव सीन दैट परीक्षित महाराज आस्किंग क्वेश्चन टू शुकदेव गोस्वामी एंड शुकदेव गोस्वामी इज आंसरिंग। And Shukadeva Goswami is speaking about an incident that happened in the Rajasuya Yajna organized by Yudhishthira Maharaj. And Shukadeva Goswami is narrating what Narada Muni told the other personality, Yudhishthira Maharaj. And the Narada Muni, what is he speaking? Narada Muni is speaking about Hiranyakashipu. And now Hiranyakashipu is going to speak about Yamaraj. So Yamaraj is going to have a discussion or is going to preach to whom? To the wives of Suyagya, the personality who has died on the battlefield, the king of Savinera. What am I pronouncing it correctly? Oh, sorry, this is Ushinara. Ushinara, yes. There is another state called Savinera, yes. Ushinara. So this Suyagya, the king of Ushinara, is killed. He's on the battlefield, and all the wives have assembled there, and they're crying, and they are not able to leave the body. You know, they're so attached to the body, and since they are all surrounding the body, so no one is able to take the dead body now for cremation. So at that time, Yamraj comes, and Yamraj starts speaking. Yamraj is going to preach, and this message, which is preached by Yamraj, in the form of a small boy, to these females who are there, that is narrated by Hiranyakashipu to whom? To the wife, Rishabhanu, the wife of Hiranyaksha, mother of Hiranyaksha, Diti, and the sons of Hiranyaksha. So this preaching, what Yamraj did, same preaching Hiranyakashipu is repeating for the kinsmen of Hiranyaksha. And whatever Hiranyakashipu is saying or preaching, the same message Narada Muni is speaking to Yudhishthira Maharaj. And whatever Narada Muni is speaking to Yudhishthira Maharaj, that message is spoken by Shukadeva Goswami to Parikshit Maharaj. This is how Bhagavatam goes deep. So if you start from between, you will not understand, you know, what's happening. So it is said, now Srila Prabhupada says, now start reading from first canto and go ahead. So here we see, now Yamraj is going to speak. So let's chant the shloka spoken by Yamraj. Text 37. Shri Yama Uvacha Aho Amisham Vayasadhikanam Vipashyatam Loka Vidhim Vimohaha Yatragatas Tatragatam Manushyam Swayam Sadharma Api Shochantya Partham. I repeat, Swayam Sadharma Api Shochantya Partham. Shochantya Partham. Okay, that means the lament. Okay. Translation. Sri Yamaraj said, alas, how amazing it is. These persons who are older than me have full experience that hundreds and thousands of living entities have taken birth and died. Thus, they should understand that they also are apt to die, yet still they are bewildered. The conditioned soul comes from an unknown place and returns after death to that same unknown place. There is no exception to this rule, which is conducted by the material nature. Knowing this, why do they uselessly lament? So let's read the purport and then we'll come back. Purport. Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Avyaktadini bhutani vyakta madhyani bharata avyakta nidananyeva tatra ka paridevana. All created beings are unmanifest in their beginning, manifest in their interim state, and unmanifest again when they're annihilated. So what need is there for lamentation? So here, basically, what this Bhagavatam Shloka and Bhagavad Gita Shloka is talking about is, so now, currently, we are living with some set of people, whom we call with various designations like spouse, kids, parents, relatives, etc. So all these people whom we are living with, so they were unmanifest before. Currently they are manifest. And after death, when they leave the body, anyways, they'll become unmanifest. So what is this unmanifest, manifest and unmanifest? What is this concept that is put forward by Krishna to Arjuna? So this comes in the second chapter. So Krishna is convincing Arjuna that, you know, these people are there with you, but anyways, they're temporary. So how is he explaining? So he's saying, avyakta dini bhutani. So avyakta, avyakta means unmanifest. So all these personalities whom we are staying with, or in general, when Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, all these personalities whom you're seeing, Arjuna, they were all unmanifest before. So what do you mean by unmanifest? Means we are not able to perceive them, right? So if I ask a question, do you know who were the people whom you're staying with in the past life? Who were they in the past life? We might not be able to answer because we don't know. We don't know because they were unmanifest. Unmanifest. They were not manifested in front of our eyes. We don't know. And then in this current life, when they have come to us, when the set of people whom we are staying with, they are with us. So now they have become manifest. And even, you know, we see this when it's come to manifest also. Give me a sec. Yeah. So when it comes to manifest also, so they don't manifest immediately, right? When a child takes birth, it takes some time for the child to grow. So in fact, it is described for a long time. For many months, the child will keep crying only because he doesn't know to speak. So only thing that he knows is krandan or crying. That's what he does for many months. Many months he does that. And then when the child is crying, the mother and father, they'll feel, oh, maybe he needs this, maybe he needs that. So one child was crying when I visited one of my relatives' house. And so I wanted to test what Bhagavatam is saying. What to do, engineer? No, so we have to do something. So I wanted to test the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam and also the seventh canto when it is spoken that parents don't understand what child needs. Then the child started crying and the mother said, oh, maybe he's having stomachache. No, I had a query. I said, how do you know? No, you're so confirmed. You're saying stomachache. No, I think so. Maybe if not stomachache, then maybe he might be hungry. Then I asked her, how do you say that he might be hungry? If not stomachache? Yeah, that's what is the normal case. If that is also not there, maybe some insect has bitten him. Then I said, where? No, on the body, I'm not able to see. That lady who was there, the mother was there, she got confused completely. Yes. So when it comes to a small kid, it cries for a very long time, for many months together. No one is able to understand only what the child needs. When the child has got some stomach upset, the mother will feel, oh, he's hungry, let me feed more. Just imagine what the child will go through. Like, you had some chappan bhog the previous day and your stomach is really upset. And then someone forcefully feeds you the next day also chappan bhog. What will happen? Same thing happens with the kid. He's already taken milk of the mother and his stomach is upset. And the mother says, oh, maybe he's hungry, let me feed him. And then she feeds more. What will happen to that child? And at times when the child is hungry, so mother might feel, oh, maybe the child, he has got some, he is hungry. So, sorry, when he is hungry, the mother might feel, oh, maybe he has got stomach pain. And then she might feed some medicine. Yes. So in this way, we see that the child, he's not manifesting all the qualities. Right? Now, suppose if someone forces us, suppose we are sitting morose and that person comes and then he says, bro, what happened? Why are you so morose? Why are you sad? And we just give a look. And the other person says, are you hungry? And we give a look. Do you have stomachache? We give a look. And we go on doing that. And finally, the person with maybe Prabhuji is, this person is hungry. Let me feed him something. So at that time, we are not going to take and eat. We're going to scold him for sure. Do your work. Let me do my work. Right. So now this speaking skill, where is the speaking skill or where is the speech of the child? So basically the speech of the child has not manifested. That is the point that I'm trying to make. It's not manifested yet. Now with time when the child grows, then slowly and steadily, various qualities will manifest. Depending on the past karma, depending on the past samskara, the impressions that the child or the person had in the past life, slowly and steadily, all those things will manifest. Now, sometimes we say, right, that when it comes to the child, or when it comes to any person for that matter, now initially when we say, oh, this person is really good, and then we say that spend some time with the person, the real colors will come with time. So what are we talking about, real colors? What are these real colors we're talking about? The real colors are basically, we'll be able to see the qualities manifested in front of us. That's what we're talking about, right? So with time, we see that the qualities and the personality himself as complete will be manifested, right? So the point that Krishna is making is, he was unmanifest before. No one knew who that person was. And now currently he's manifest in front of our eyes. So we are able to see who is he. We are able to perceive his qualities and other things. And when the person leaves the body, what happens? He becomes unmanifest. The body is lying there. But now we are not able to see any of those things when we were seeing when he was present or when he was alive. So again, he has become unmanifest, right? So people say that jahan se aaya tha wahi chala gaya. Where he came from, he has gone back there only. So what are people talking about? People are talking about some place he had come from. I didn't know which place he had come from. Now he has gone to the same place. And what is that same place? Unknown place. And that's what people talk about. He came from an unknown place and he has gone to an unknown place. So in this way, people address, even in our day-to-day language, you know, we speak philosophy in India. Because it's there in our blood. Now what to do? The culture and, you know, the entire philosophy is already there. So, you know, when it comes to a person's death, the addressing is also like that. In our all the different languages, we say that person has passed away. It's there in us. And, you know, if you ask foreigners, they say person has passed away. If you ask who has passed away, they might not be able to answer. But if you ask any Indian, that person might be able to say the soul has passed away. So Atma Gyan, which is there, Atma Gyan, Paramatma Gyan is already there in all of us. It's already there. But unfortunately, as I've been speaking from quite some time now, unfortunately, the surrounding has covered our actual knowledge, which we have got in parampara. So in this way, we see that a person who was unmanifest has become manifest, and with time he's going to become unmanifest. So Yamaraj, as a small boy, he's asking a question. So why are you lamenting so much? He came from a place, unknown place, and now he's gone to the unknown place. So why are you lamenting here? That's what is the question that Yamaraj is putting forward. And also Yamaraj is making a very nice point. He's saying, "Are you people are elder to me." So Yamaraj has taken a form of a small boy. And why the small boy? Acharya's comment saying small boy will not be stopped, right? Will not be stopped from going anywhere. And when a small boy speaks, like I see most of your kids, when they tell shloka, it's very charming. When we tell shloka, no one tells, oh, very nice, you know, so nicely you're telling. But someone tells the same shloka, small boy, small girl, she tells the same shloka, Dhritarashtra vacha. Yes, we are like, oh, so nice, amazing, and so on and so forth, right? So a small child, when he speaks philosophy, it feels very nice to see, very nice to hear. And people hear with rapt attention. And Yamaraj felt, you know, if I also go as an elderly person, maybe these people might not listen to me. But if I go as a child and speak philosophy, then yes, all of them will hear with rapt attention. And that is the reason Yamaraj has come in a form of a small boy and he's speaking to all of them. And what is Yamaraj saying in this particular shloka? He's saying, "Are you people are so experienced. All of you all are so experienced. Why? Because you have seen many people taking birth and many people dying. Then why are you crying? What is the reason? Why are you all crying? Why are you all lamenting?" That is the question that is posted here by Yamaraj. Let's see what Prabhupada is saying in the purport. "Accepting that there are two classes of philosophers, one believing in the existence of soul and other not believing in the existence. There is no cause for lamentation in either case." So now Prabhupada is giving a different angle altogether by which the attachment of a person will reduce. So let's see what is that angle that Prabhupada is giving. "Non-believers in the existence of soul are called atheists by followers of Vedic wisdom. Yet even if for argument's sake we accept the atheistic theory, there is still no cause for lamentation. Apart from the separate existence of the soul, the material elements remain unmanifested before creation. From this subtle state of unmanifestation comes manifestation. Just as from ether, air is generated, from air, fire is generated, from fire, water is generated, and from water, earth comes manifested. From earth, many varieties of manifestations take place. For example, a big skyscraper building, a skyscraper is manifested from earth. When it is dismantled, the manifestation becomes unmanifest and remains as atoms in the ultimate stage. The law of conservation of energy remains, but in course of time, things are manifested and unmanifested. That is the difference. Then what cause is there for lamentation in either manifestation or unmanifestation? Somehow or other, even in unmanifested stage, things are not lost. Both at the beginning and at the end, all elements remain unmanifested. And this does not make any real material difference. So this paragraph is all about manifestation and unmanifestation. Okay, let me explain to people, you know, for whom it was a bouncer. So what is Prabhupada saying, trying to say here is, let's accept the atheistic philosophy. Prabhupada does this in his purports. He accepts the atheistic philosophy, Maya philosophy, and then he proves it wrong. That's what we do in mathematics, right? Let's assume that it's correct, and then we prove it wrong towards the end. So that's what Prabhupada is doing here. So Prabhupada is saying, let's consider the atheistic philosophy. What do atheists say? There is no soul, there is no spirit. So now Prabhupada's statement is, okay, let's agree that there is no spirit. So this body is there. What is this body made up of? Five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. And in between, Prabhupada is giving the translation of shlokas from third canto. So in third canto, the entire creation is described. The Sankhya philosophy is described. So in that Sankhya philosophy, it's very clear that first comes ether, and from ether comes air. And from air, fire gets manifested. And from fire, water gets manifested. And from water, earth gets manifested. Now, don't ask me question that how is it possible, Prabhu? Only Krishna can answer that. I cannot answer. So this is how it started. This is how it started. The first thing that existed was sound. Sound manifestation. So sound was there, and from sound came ether and whatever I said currently. So from ether comes air, from air comes fire, then water, and then earth. And now earth can be used for various different things. And Prabhupada gives the example of skyscraper building. So now when you build a building, so you're using the five elements and the building is built. And when the building is crashed, again, those five elements are mixed back to the original. So that's what Prabhupada is saying here, that suppose we accept the atheistic philosophy. So what does atheistic philosophy say? There is no soul. Okay, so let's assume there is no soul. So this body is made up of five elements: earth, water, fire, air, ether. So now when the person dies, then people say that everything is destroyed when the person leaves the body, or when the person dies, everything is destroyed at the end of life. No, so enjoy, Marty. Enjoy. So Prabhupada is saying here that when the person is living, he's made up of five elements. And when the person is dead, so these five elements, the body which is made up of five elements, mixes back with the five elements. So what is the problem? Why are we really making a fuss out of it? So Prabhupada's statement is, anyways, it was unmanifest before. Then this body was made with five elements. And then when the person dies, again the body dismantles and five elements mixes with the five elements, the original five elements. Now in this way, Prabhupada is saying, even if a person is atheist, there is no question of lamentation. Why are we lamenting when a person dies? That's what is the argument that Prabhupada places in this particular paragraph. Let's see the other paragraph, what Prabhupada is saying. If we accept the Vedic conclusion as stated in Bhagavad Gita, antavanta ime dehaha, that these material bodies are perishable in due course of time, but that soul is eternal, then we must remember always that the body is like a dress, therefore why lament the changing of the dress? Now Prabhupada is talking about theistic philosophy. Atheistic philosophy, no soul. Now he's talking about theistic philosophy. Soul exists. So he's saying that when the person leaves the body, so it is similar to a person changing the cloth. So when the soul leaves the body, it's going to accept another body. So where is the question of lamentation now? Right? And the shloka is from second chapter. Vasamsi jirnani yatha vihaya navani granati naro parani tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani anyani samyati navani dehi. So there, that particular shloka says that when a soul leaves the body, it's similar to a person changing his own cloth. So he removes the old cloth and puts on the new one. Similarly, the soul gives up the old body and accepts the new one. So Prabhupada is saying here, if that is the case, if soul is eternal, then why lament? The material body has no factual existence in relation to the soul. It is sometime like a dream. In a dream, we may think of flying in the sky or sitting on a chariot as a king. But when we wake up, we can see that we are neither in the sky nor seated on the chariot. This is what happens in our dreams also. When we dream, so we are in a different place altogether. We have a different structure of the body maybe, and we are dressed now in a different way. But when we get up, so where is it? So it was not there before, but we saw something in the dream. And again, when we got up, it's not there. So unmanifest, manifest, unmanifest. So this is the concept which is explained here in this purport. The Vedic wisdom encourages self-realization on the basis of non-existence of the material body. Therefore, in either case, whether one believes in existence of the soul or one does not believe in the existence of soul, there is no cause for lamentation for the loss of body. In Mahabharata, it is said that adarshanat ihayatah punas chadarshanam gatah. This statement could support the theory of atheistic scientists that the child in the womb of the mother has no life, but is simply a lump of matter. To follow this theory, if the lump of matter is aborted by a surgical operation, no life is killed. The body of a child is like a tumor, and if a tumor is operated upon and thrown away, no sin is involved. The same argument could be put forward in regard to the king and his queens. The body of the king was manifested from the unmanifest source, and again it became unmanifest from manifestation. Since manifestation exists only in the middle, between the two points of unmanifestation, why should one cry for the body manifested in the interim? So for a very short duration, you know, we manifest. And for a long time, for a very long time, previously, I mean before existing and after leaving the body, in both the case, the person doesn't exist. I mean, that person whom we are seeing doesn't exist. That is the point that is made here. Yes. But when it comes to abortion, this particular point that is made, that is this one. That's the atheistic philosophy that Prabhupada is putting forward just to prove the point. Okay. So that is not the right statement. So when the child is aborted, it is very clearly given in the Shastra that it is one of the sinful act. It is equivalent to murdering someone. So whatever sin a person gets by murdering someone, same sin the person will get when the abortion is done. Nowadays it's fashion. Yes. Oh, I don't need a child at this particular point of time. So what are you going to do? Abort. And doctors also, you know, very nicely they say that no problem, abort it if you don't want the child. No. And even if the child is not well developed in the womb, Shastras say that come what may, the child shouldn't be aborted. It's your karma and you have to go through the karma. This is what the Shastras say. If suppose the person gets to know that the child is handicapped or, you know, whatever, retarded, physically retarded, mentally retarded. I don't know if we understand if the child is mentally retarded in the womb. But physically, yes. No, we understand. So the Shastras say, in any case, the child shouldn't be aborted. It is murder. And when the murder is done, it is very, very sinful. Very sin. Already we have committed so many sins. And again, you know, we commit a sin. Right? And the doctor who is recommending, even that person shares the sin of the person who is aborting the child. Right? So in this way, Shastras don't recommend abortion at all. It's similar to divorce. So Shastras don't recommend divorce. There is no question of divorce anywhere in the Shastra. Similarly, there is no question of abortion anywhere in the Shastra. And in Vedic times, there was no question of abortion because Shastras were followed at that time. Right? Text 38. Translation. It is wonderful that these elderly women do not have a higher sense of life than we do. So this is a punch that Yamaraj is putting. He's saying it is wonderful that these elderly women do not have a higher sense of life than we do. Indeed, we are most fortunate. For although we are children and have been left to struggle in material life, unprotected by father and mother, and although we are very weak, we have not been vanquished or eaten by ferocious animals. Thus, we have a firm belief that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given us protection even in the womb of mother, will protect us everywhere. We'll come back to the shloka. One point which is coming to my mind is about why is it again and again Vedic scriptures are saying when a person dies, don't lament. And when a person takes birth, don't celebrate. I mean, Shastras put it in like this, that why, what is the point in becoming sad when a person dies? And what is the need of celebrating when a person takes birth? You know, that's the question that Shastras put forward. Why is the statement that is made? And this is connected to something called a sutak. So all of you might be following this, that when a person dies, so we follow sutak for 10 days or whatever, for a month, max up to 1 month, where we are not allowed to go to any temple, we are not allowed to worship directly. And when a child also takes birth, the same thing happens. The same thing happens where sutak is there. So where, again, the same thing. You know, we're not supposed to worship and not go to the temple. In either case, what is that point that is that the Shastras are making here? Let's understand this concept. So when a person dies or when a child takes birth, so let's discuss about the person dies first. So when a person dies and the person is very much connected to us, we feel a lot of pain in our heart because a person who is very close to us has left us. So most of the time goes in crying. There have been times when people have cried for, you know, more than 2-3 years also. There have been times when, you know, people have cried like that. Oh, he has gone. Oh, he has gone. Yes. So that shoka is there in the heart. That pain is there in the heart. That suffering is there in the heart. And when a person takes birth, so now when the person takes birth, there is a different happiness in the heart. A different happiness altogether. And in both the cases, what is happening is, in both the cases, our consciousness is absorbed in something else. Either we are absorbed in the person who has dead or who has died, or we are absorbed in the person who has taken birth. So it is said, so it is recommended that a person shouldn't go to the temple. Why? Because now you're not absorbed in Krishna. You're absorbed in someone else. So when you go to a temple and you're just thinking about that person who has died or that person who has taken birth, you're actually committing an offense. So when we are worshipping also, so the mood is, we are completely absorbed when we are worshipping the Lord. So when we are offering incense, so at that time we are offering at the lotus feet, and then we are observing the lotus feet, then at the navel, then at the entire body. So we are actually absorbed in taking the darshan of the Lord, and we are absorbed in serving the Lord. But when a person dies or when a person takes birth, at that time our absorption is completely different. So it is said that when a person dies or when a person takes birth, no need to either lament so much or celebrate so much. Yes. And now, since people are anyways going to do that, Shastras know the people are, since attached, they will surely be very sad. And since they're attached, they surely be very happy when someone takes birth. So Shastras gives this duration of sutak. So for Brahmanas, the sutak time is less, maybe a week or less than that. Maybe 10 days or less than that. And when it comes to Kshatriyas, it is a bit more than 10 days. When it comes to Vaishyas, it is more than that. And when it comes to Shudras, it's 1 month. So for 1 month, they're not allowed to do deity worship or whatever. Why it is so? Because the Brahmanas are the ones who have got Shastric knowledge. So they know, it's okay, it is done. Why should I really be sad and be absorbed in that? And then when it comes to Kshatriyas, they have some knowledge from Shastra because they keep hearing from Brahmanas. Vaishyas have little lesser knowledge, but they have some knowledge. And Shudras, they don't have any knowledge of that. So they take some time, to recover, from that traumatic situation, or that situation of happiness another person goes through. Right? So in this way, we see that when we are extremely sad or when we are extremely happy, you know what is happening? We are losing time. What time are we losing? We are losing time of rare human form of life. We are losing time, which was meant for getting absorbed in Krishna consciousness. That is the reason Shastras are giving us different angles. That when a child takes birth, what is the need of so much of celebration? And when the person dies, what is the need of so much of lamentation? This is what is the point that Shastras are making again and again. Because Shastras are actually telling us that the goal of life is to be absorbed in Krishna consciousness and attain Krishna this very lifetime. That is the goal. Right? So when some mishap happens like this, and when we get absorbed in that situation, so what's happening? Our consciousness is completely absorbed in that situation, and we are not able to think about Krishna. And when we are not able to think about Krishna, we are actually wasting the rare time given in this rare human form. So that is the reason it is said that whenever we go through some sad situation, or whenever we are extremely happy or whatever, so at that time, we have to consult our superiors immediately. Immediately we have to consult our superiors. And when our superiors speak, immediately we are out of that sadness. Happiness, I understood when it happened with me. So it was final year engineering. And then by Lord's mercy, we were fortunate to receive the best student, the student of the year award. And my parents had come. And it was very, very nice, a celebration at that time. Then I called up my mentor. Amarinder Prabhu was my mentor at that time. So I called him up and I said, Prabhu, I've received an award. So Prabhu said, you can remain on the seventh cloud for some time, but please come back as fast as possible. This is what he told me at that time. So our superiors are the ones who help us to understand the reality. Don't go to the seventh cloud or whatever, and don't bury yourself when we are sad. So this is the point that is made. Why we are not supposed to do that? Because human life is rare, and the time of the human life is even more rare, because that time is meant only and only and only to remember Krishna, to do devotional service and attain Krishna this very lifetime. That is the reason, again and again, Shastras say, don't lament too much and don't hanker too much or don't celebrate too much. And that's what Krishna is telling in Bhagavad Gita. He tells that in that particular shloka. What is that? I'm not able to remember. Prasannatma, na sauchati, na kangshati. How does it start? Can anyone post it here? Brahma bhuta prasannatma. Brahma bhuta prasannatma, na sauchati, na kangshati. Samha sarveshu bhuteshu mad bhaktim labate para. So here Krishna is saying, in this particular shloka, he is saying that personality who doesn't lament when something is lost, and who doesn't hanker or doesn't celebrate for getting something or when he gets something, such a person who is sama in both of the situations, such a person will be able to attain my devotional service. Mad bhaktim labhate para. So this particular shloka becomes very, very clear when we go through the different things that are given in Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita again, right? Now it's very clear why Shastras say that don't lament or don't celebrate too much. Why? Because that time is given, or the time that is given to us, is for meditating or chanting the holy names of Krishna and nothing else. Right? So this is the concept of why not to lament and why not to celebrate. So if you have any question, please let me know. We'll discuss on this concept. Text 39. 39 only, no? Yeah, okay. This we have not discussed. 38 is not discussed. Okay. So in 38, Yamaraj is saying a very nice point. He's saying that, we are small kids. So Yamaraj is he's just portraying that he's a small kid. So he has come there in that form of a kid. So he's saying, I'm a small kid and I'm unprotected. So he's saying basically that he's an orphan. So I'm unprotected. But look at me, even when I'm unprotected, when I have no father and mother, so even when I've got a tender body, when I'm weak, but still, I've not been vanquished or eaten by any ferocious animals. So he's saying, so we have firm faith in Supreme Personality of Godhead that He will protect us in all situations and circumstances. So again, we come to the point of faith. Let's read the purport and discuss on this matter. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 18:61, Ishvara Sarva Bhutanam Riddheshe Arjuna Tishthati. The Lord is present in the core of everyone's heart. Thus, the Lord gives protection to everyone and gives the different types of bodies the living entity wants to enjoy. Everything is done by the order of Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, one should not lament the birth and death of a living being which have been arranged by the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Sarvasya chaham ridisan nivishto matta smritir jnanam apohanam cha. I'm seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. One must act according to the direction of the Lord within the heart, but Because the conditioned soul wants to act independently, the Lord gives him the facility to act and experience the reactions. The Lord says, Sarvadharman parityajya mamekam sharanam raja. Give up all other duties and simply surrender unto me. One who does not abide by the orders of Supreme Personality of Godhead is given the facility to enjoy this material world. Instead of restricting him, the Lord gives the conditioned soul the opportunity to enjoy. So that by mature experience, after many, many births, bhavanam janmanam ante, he will understand that surrender to the lotus feet of Vasudeva is the only duty of all living beings. So this last line is for all of us. So after a mature experience, after experiencing it from so many lifetimes, now finally we have come to understand Srimad Bhagavatam and to understand that ultimate goal is to attain Krishna. So what is Prabhupada saying in this particular shloka? So in this particular purport, now Prabhupada is saying that because of the desire of the living entity, whatever the living entity desires, Lord sanctions. And he gives a particular body so that the living entity can enjoy whatever he has desired. So who is the culprit here? We. Our desires are the ones which makes the next body. Whatever we desire. And because of the desire, the actions that come up. So this karma aspect which is there. So what is karma? Karma is that action which creates the next body. Now this is one line that Prabhupada mentions in one of the purports of Bhagavad Gita. So whatever we are desiring, so here it's very clearly mentioned, Prabhupada says that instead of restricting him, Lord can restrict us, but what is Lord doing? Instead of restricting our desire, what is Lord doing? Lord gives the conditioned soul an opportunity. What is that opportunity? Opportunity to enjoy whatever he has desired. And the next line that Prabhupada makes is, so that by the mature experience, after many, many births, he'll understand that surrender to lotus feet of Vasudeva is the ultimate thing. So now you see this one aspect, which is very clearly mentioned here, is that we have been doing the same activity lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Same activity. And what is that activity all about? The activity of sense gratification. There is nothing beyond this we do. In this material life, we don't do anything apart from sense gratification. And now, since we are desiring, and since we have desire to do sense gratification, Lord is forced to sanction. So, ideally we say Lord is controlling us, but actually, now we are such great culprits that we are controlling the Lord by our desire. We are making the Lord do what we need. Look at our fallen state. What are we supposed to do as living entities? We have to serve the Supreme Personality of God. But because of our tendency of sense gratification, because of the desires for sense gratification, what is happening? We are ordering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I want this. Like a small child, he orders, I want this, I want it, I want it, I want it. And finally the parent gets frustrated, okay, Baba, I'll get you, come. Same thing is happening with us. We get a desire, it intensifies more and more and more. And when the desire becomes intense, Krishna sanctions. And he orders material nature. I do whatever this person needs. Too frustrating this person is. Again and again is desiring so much. Too frustrating. You fulfill all the desire, whatever he needs. And when material nature is given this task, fulfill the desire. Who is she? She's Durga. She's having the Trishul. And at the same time, the three modes of material nature. Okay. So we have Sattva, Guna, Rajoguna and Tamoguna. So then, you know, with strings in her hand, she pulls. Like suppose the person desires something in Sattva Guna. Now she pulls that string and the person acts in Sattva Guna. And then he's able to fulfill that desire that he wanted to enjoy. And at the same time, she has a Trishul in the other hand. Then she pokes the other person. Yes, then she pokes the person with the Trishul. That is Adi Atmika Klesha, Adi Bhautika Klesha, Adi Daivika Klesha. So that Trishul basically is the sufferings caused by our own self, that is body and mind, sufferings caused by other living entities, and suffering caused by daiva, that is natural calamities. So with that Trishul, she's poking from one end, and from the other end, you know, the whatever desires are there, you know, that is getting manifested. So in this way, you know, this entire material nature works. Can you imagine our fallen state? We are thinking that we are enjoying in this material world. What is that enjoyment? Poking from Durga Devi. She's poking us with a trishul again and again and again. Nikal bahar yahan se. Get out from here. Get out from here. Get out from here. But we have some other desires only. And we have become so thick-skinned. We have become so thick-skinned now. She's poking us with a trishul. And we are like, aha, very nice. Go on and on and on. And here we are desiring more and more and more. You look at our current situation. Tsunami happened. In India, tsunami happened. In Nepal, this earthquake happened. And then Corona is there anyways, you know, everywhere. And now it will burst anyways in India also, like it is happening in US. So all these things are happening around. But our state, we are in a different world altogether. It's almost like we are in a fairy, you know, like it's like a fairy tale. We are there in a different world altogether. Maybe we can call it as Wonderland or something like that. And we are living in that land always. And in reality, something else is only happening. In reality, there's so many sufferings, you know, which we're going through. But we are in that some other wonderland where we are enjoying, we are having some other desires only. Corona is there and the earthquake is happening, tsunami is happening. Someone posted that there was a big sound in Bangalore. I couldn't hear, I don't know, but I read in some messages. So something or the other is happening around, but we are there in that wonderland and we have some desires. What are those desires? Oh, I want to enjoy like this. I want to wear such type of clothes. I want to buy this car. I want to buy that car. Oh, 2 BHK is pretty less. It's pretty small. Let me go for a 3 BHK. Oh, 3 BHK is also less. Let me go for a villa. And the person ends up taking 1.5 crores or 2 crores of loan and entire life keeps paying EMI. So we are in wonderland altogether. But reality is something else. If a person comes to reality, he'll understand, Are Bapre, so much of suffering is there in this world. So much of suffering is there. The better I understand what is permanent and attain that permanent. But that consciousness doesn't come. We are always in the wonderland. Even now in the situation of Corona, you know, so many people, they're in a different world only altogether. They're thinking, when the situation will subside, when coronavirus will subside, then I'll go to this place and I'll enjoy there. I'll go to that restaurant and enjoy there. Yes, and you know, a few of my friends, they were supposed to get married. You know, their marriage is postponed. They're planning, you know, when to get married and which hall to book and this and that. Yes, and then the other things of, in the house, you know, this wall, for a long time we are in the house, so we understand, this wall is looking empty. You know, I should get something to put on this wall and decorate this wall very nicely. So basically, we can understand. Reality is something else, but we are there in some wonderland altogether. And we call ourselves practical. We call ourselves as, I am a person who lives in reality. And who are these people who are saying this? Those people who say that, scriptures are impractical. The ones who don't read scriptures, they are there in the wonderland. And always in the wonderland, always in the mood of Bollywood, Hollywood, Tollywood, whatever. They want to live a life like that. So, you know, when it comes to all these things, one thing we have to understand is that this wonderland thought process, we have to come out of it. And this desire of sense gratification, which is there, should reduce and it should be dovetailed to service of Krishna. So at one end, there is sense gratification. At the other end, it's service of Krishna. So sense gratification is like the wonderland and service of Krishna is Goloka. So if you decide where to go, when we are there, always thinking of sense gratification, I want to enjoy this and that and this and that, we can never ever come to the platform of serving Krishna. But Krishna is very merciful. We have to just desire. So from this platform of sense gratification, we can easily shift to this platform of serving Krishna. How? In between, there is one connection that is called desire. We can just desire. Oh, Krishna, enough of sense gratification that I've done throughout my life and so many lifetimes. Oh, Lord, now it is the time that I want to completely surrender unto you and do only devotional service. And what Lord does at that time? He shifts us. He picks us up from the platform of sense gratification and places us on the platform of service. This is a very important thing that we all have to understand. If we just keep desiring for sense gratification, we have to understand we are always in wonderland. We are not in reality. We are not practical people. We are impractical. And when we come to service of the Lord, then it is practical. Why? Why is it practical? Service of the Lord, why is it practical? Because that is the activity that will actually take us to the world which is reality, taking us away from this illusory world and put us back to the place where we have come from. That is reality. So people who are doing devotional service, they are practical. The people who are doing sense gratification, they are extremely impractical. Why they are impractical? Because they are there in some different world altogether, Wonderland. Yes. And the desires that they have, what are those desires going to do with them? Create another body to stay in this world back. So when a person dies, yes, and when the person dies, so at one place farewell is given. Tata, bye. And the other place when the person is taking birth, there, welcome. Swagatam, suswagatam. So so you can imagine there's a screen. Okay, so half of the screen, people are saying tata, bye-bye, they're giving farewell. And the other half of screen, people are celebrating to receive the same person. To receive the same person, the other half of the screen, they're celebrating. Welcome. Swagatam, suswagatam. This is what is happening in our life. From one screen to another, you know, we are going. Why? Because of our desires. I want to enjoy this. I want to enjoy that. So now what are we supposed to do? We are supposed to desire, change the desire. And we have to desire what? I want to serve Krishna. I just want to serve Krishna in this life. I don't want to do anything else. And you'll see when a person desires like that, Krishna takes charge of the life of that person. And Krishna will arrange everything. All the material aspect that is needed in life, he will arrange. All the material elements which are needed in life to maintain this body and family, he will place it properly at the right place, at the right position. Currently, we are planning and we are placing everything at different places. But we are not able to solve that jigsaw puzzle which is given to us. Because that is made by Lord, right? How can we solve that jigsaw puzzle? But still, we always plan, oh, maybe this part, maybe this particular part will fit. Oh, it's not fitting. Let me change my plan. Oh, let me get that part of jigsaw puzzle and then place it here. Oh, this is also not fitting. An entire life, we keep doing this and nothing fits. We are not satisfied. But when a devotee, when a person becomes a devotee, when he surrenders to Krishna, when he desires to serve Krishna only, when he desires to do bhakti alone, and he wants to dedicate his entire life for doing devotional service, what happens is, he is busy serving the Lord, and what Lord is doing? He is arranging the jigsaw puzzle very nicely, and finally when the person leaves the body, yes, or when a devotee attains Krishna, he sees, oh, everything is set. I didn't do anything. Everything is set. This is what the person feels. And since everything is set, there is no desire. There's no desire. And when there is no desire, the only desire that he has is to attain Krishna. He'll go back home, back to God. Right? So this solving of the jigsaw puzzle is what we are doing the entire lifetime after lifetime. It doesn't solve in one lifetime. So in the next lifetime, we have a desire. Oh, no, I have to solve this. And that desire is carry forward. And then, oh, this lifetime at least I will do. Next lifetime, at least I'll do now. At least I'll do now. And like this, from time immemorial, we are there here, desiring to solve the jigsaw puzzle of life, to become stabilized in life, to do better sense gratification. And we're not able to do that. But now currently, when we are devotees, when we desire that I want to attain Krishna this very lifetime, what happens at that time? Krishna takes charge of us, of our life, like he took charge of the chariot of Arjuna. And what does he do? He solves all the jigsaw puzzle that is there and everything is set. And the devotee doesn't worry for anything. Now the devotee is peaceful. Yes. That's what he's talking about here in the shloka. What is he talking about? He's talking about the faith aspect on the Lord. We have discussed a lot in Amrish Maharaj's pastime, the aspect of faith. This faith has to be there that if I hold the hand of Krishna, if I hold the hand of Krishna, then I don't have any problem in life. I will not have any problem in life. Currently, our situation is like that child who is trying to cross the traffic. There's a huge traffic on the road and the child is trying to cross the traffic. Actually, the child was holding the little finger of his parents and he was going and doing masti. He has just left the little finger of his parents. And the parents were also busy maybe doing something. The child is lost and the child is trying to cross the traffic by himself. What will happen? The child will be in complete anxiety. But when the child sees the parent, he runs to him. And then when he holds back the little finger, what happens? all the anxiety comes to zero. Because now what's happening? The child has complete faith in the parent that this person will help me to cross this traffic. So there's no anxiety. There's no anxiety at all. So our situation is like that child who has left the little finger of the parent. We have left Krishna. We don't have faith in Krishna. Yes. That is the reason we are struggling. That is the reason we have anxiety in life. I would like to just put forward the same concept which I have discussed before. Now, all of us have got different situations in our life. And those situations put us in anxiety. And which are those situations which have put us in anxiety? Those situations which are out of control. Correct? So, there are many situations in life which are out of control. So, at that time, we get into anxiety. One of my friend from Mumbai, he had called me some couple of days back. And he was telling, "Arey, I couldn't sleep for many days because of Corona." I said, "Why? In your house, someone is affected by Corona?" He said, no one is. But the state of the entire world, it's very difficult." Then I asked him a simple question. "Okay, so can you control the situation which is there?" He said, "Nay." Then why are we literally struggling for that? If the situation is uncontrolled, why are we literally struggling to control it? All the anxiety that comes in our life is all because the situation which is not under our control, we are trying to control it by force. And as much as we try, we cannot control that because that is out of our control. Out of our control. Like today afternoon, I was speaking to one of my friend from Mumbai, a devotee friend. So he was a bit worried. He's not getting a proper match for marriage. Then same discussion. So his entire family is getting worried. You say, "Oh, he's not getting a proper match," and things like that. So now the situation is out of control. You cannot do anything. He has done everything possible. Marriage boards and talking to relatives. Everything is done. Now what else can he do? What else remains? Now he cannot just go around and keep proposing the female who is going around. He'll get nice hitting from the sandal. Now situation is out of control. I've got a few of my very dear Grihastha devotees. Some of them are struggling. Some of them are struggling to beget kids. Now that situation is out of control. What to do? We have tried everything. We've gone to hospital and the doctors have given solution or the doctors have said things are fine or some doctors have given solution. Yes, and it's not working. But still when the person remains in anxiety, what does that mean? Even after understanding that situation is out of my control, I'm trying to pull all the strings together to get it in control. And now since the situation was out of control, all the strings were far apart. And when you're pulling all that together, what's happening? There's a lot of stress because all the strings which are there, those are strained now. And because of that stress, there's so much of anxiety in our life, so much of anxiety. And then finally, we have to give up. We have to give up when we are like in case of Draupadi. No, when situation was out of control, but still she was holding the sari for a long, long time. And finally, when she realized, "Abhi kuch nahi ho sakta mera, I cannot do anything. This situation is out of my control." And when she stopped controlling the situation, which was out of control, and when she raised her arms and called out, "Oh Govinda, oh Krishna," Krishna appeared. In the situation, when Draupadi Vastraharan was going on, Krishna was sitting with Rukmini. And this question, Rukmini is telling, "Arey, your devotee is suffering. Some problem is there. You go and solve." Then Krishna said, "Let her control. She's trying to control a situation which is uncontrolled. Let her control. And if she can control, well and good. I can glorify my devotee. If she cannot control, she'll call me. And when she calls me, I'll go." Krishna is a tricky person. Only when we call, he'll come. He's a great personality. No, what to do? He says, right? "Matta parataram nanyat kinchid asti dhananjaya. I'm really, no one is there above me. I'm asama urdhva. There is no one equal to me. There is nowhere greater than me." So he's a great person. A mortal being in this world who's a prime minister or president needs an invitation, for any program. So don't we think that when it comes to Krishna, he also needs an invitation. And what is that invitation all about? Having faith and chanting the holy names. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Till now, Lord has been maintaining us lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. Yes, He is the one who is maintaining us. He is the one who is protecting us lifetime after lifetime. Our problem is we want protection the way we are asking. So we have a plan, okay? And then we tell the Lord, see, you have to protect me in this particular way. So it's almost like we are telling the Lord, see, you're a person who is all powerful, but then you don't have buddhi. You're not that intelligent. All the buddhi you have given to me. So I have the best plan. I'll tell you the plan and you use the power and do that particular thing for me. That's what we do when we ask for protection from the Lord. So the important point that we have to understand is Lord is all intelligent. Firstly, we have to come down. Now our pride should reduce first that we are intelligent. Now we are dumb people on this earth. Our plans are useless. Yeah, so we should have that faith that yes, he is the intelligent person. He is the powerful person. He can do anything. Situation might be out of my control, but situation is there in his control. So that faith should be there that Lord will help me in every situation the way he wants, not the way I want. I'm asking for help from the Lord and I'm expecting the Lord to come from the front door. But Lord is omnipresent. He can come from anywhere. He might come from wall, he might come from ceiling, he might come from windows or a back door. But our problem is, no, you come from here only. And then when Lord doesn't come from the front door, when Lord doesn't do what we have said or what we have asked for, at that time we don't have faith. Oh, see, I prayed, but then, you know, it's not happening. Hey, Baba, it is happening. It is happening the way Lord wants. And he knows very well what is good and what is not just good, what is best for his kids. So we all are his part and parcel. We all are his kids. So he knows very well what is the best thing for us. So whatever happens in our life, Lord is actually giving us protection. Whatever happens, even if the person dies, it's a protection by the Lord. Why? He's protecting. Maybe he might give some other body which is much favorable for devotional service. You never know. If a person is getting diseased, Lord is giving us protection through the disease. How? Through that disease, a person becomes more intense in bhakti. He might feel, oh, okay, anyways, I'm going to die. Let me do bhakti more. Like Parikshit Maharaj's case, when he was cursed. So that was the curse was a protection by Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because that curse which he got, that 7 days you're going to die, you know, that 7 days, what did Parikshit Maharaj do? He became intense in his devotional service. And that is the reason we have got Bhagavatam. So Bhagavatam is so intense because the discussion was so intense because the person is about to die. And what happened when he became intense in bhakti? He went home back to Godhead. So every phase of our life is a protection given by the Lord. We shouldn't bother about anything in our life. Anything. We should be like that small child who does not know anything apart from playing. You see small kids, they're least bothered. Where is money coming from? Who is paying my school fees? And where will money come from for getting this particular toy? The child is least bothered about all that. Least bothered. He'll just tell. Sometimes I've seen small kids telling, Mama, I want that car. And which car is talking about? BMW or Mercedes or whatever. I want that car. So they are least bothered. Where will the money come from? What will happen? And how things will manifest? They'll ask something very big. Like Krishna knows everything, but he was doing the childhood pastime. So he would tell Mother Yashoda, I want that moon. And Mother Yashoda would go crazy. Are Bapre, kaha se lau? Where will I get this moon from? How will I get this moon for you? So this question she would ask. Then she would take the tension and then she would arrange different pots with water, and then moon will be reflected on this water, and then she will tell Krishna, see, I've got moon for you. Take this pot. And Krishna would say, moon is there in this. So who took the anxiety? Parent. Currently also parents are taking anxiety. The kid is asking, get me that, get me this. Parents take anxiety. Similarly, our job is just to be relaxed. Krishna will take the anxiety. Now, why worry? Now, there's a nice statement. Why worry in presence of Hari? Yes. Since we have forgotten Hari, worry has manifested in our life. That's what we're seeing in the situation of the wives of Suyagya. In the absence of Hari, worry automatically manifests. Right? In our case also, since we don't have this faith that Lord is giving us protection all walks of life, since we don't have that faith, since we don't have that firm faith, we get into anxiety and we make a mess out of our life. And in life is fully spent in anxiety. Where is happiness? Where is happiness there? It's just anxiety, and in between anxiety, there is a bit of gap. We take a break. And in that break, we feel, my life is so good. No, full life is full of anxiety. So this faith has to be there in our life that yes, Krishna is protecting me in every situation. And because of him, today I've come closer to him. Because of him, I got association of devotees. Because of him, I'm able to chant. Because of him, I'm getting, you know, to read and hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Because of him, I'm progressing on the path of bhakti. And what is he doing? How is he doing? He knows very well. He knows very well what plan he has for all of us. So whatever we are going through in our life, the only thing that we have to have in our heart is intense faith. Intense faith. When we have that intense faith, then there will be no one in this world who can shake us. That is the reason no sadhu can be shaken. No sadhu can be shaken. Because sadhu has complete faith in Krishna. A pure devotee has complete faith in Krishna. And anything happens in his life, he is not shaken at all. Not shaken at all. Yes. Even if some people come to kill him, he'll be peaceful. Your job, you protect. My job is to chant. I'll chant. Yeah. But when it comes to normal beings like us, practicing devotees like us, sadhakas like us, we have little faith and we have started our bhakti. And how have we got that little faith? I started chanting. Prabhuji, I started chanting. I got promotion. Prabhuji, I started chanting. I got a kid. Prabhuji, I started chanting. I got a proper match. Oh, that's all okay. When we are chanting, that might be a byproduct, possible, no doubt. But that's very, very temporary that we are looking forward for. Yes. Everything that is happening in our life, yes, that is a benediction by the Lord. This is the perspective that devotees have to get by reading Srimad Bhagavatam and by analyzing our situation, our life. We have to analyze this very, very properly and see that how every situation that I have gone through, I've actually come closer to Krishna. Every situation currently. And whatever situation I'm currently going through is an opportunity to get closer to Krishna. So there was some problem which I was going through and I was really tensed. And I was feeling very stressed because of that. But then fortunately, when I speak for myself. So I remembered whatever I spoke, whatever I've heard, from my superiors. And then, I said, whatever stress is there, let it be there. My job is to do devotional service. And when I started doing that, I saw that, whatever stress was there, that reduced. And then, after some time, I saw that particular phase which I had been through, that actually made me intense in my devotional service and got, a good amount of faith in Krishna. Right? I'm sure. I'm not a big person to get these realizations. All of us will have such situations. So whatever opportunities come, let's convert that, or whatever terrible situations in our life come, let's convert that into opportunity to practice bhakti intensely. How? By having intense faith in Krishna. Why we should have intense faith in Krishna? Because everything that he is doing is for our benefit and every action of his is a protection in our life. Be it bad health, be it monetary fall down, be it someone dying in the house, or be it anything for that matter. Anything. Everything is his plan. And not even a blade of grass in this world moves without his sanction. Maya dakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetu nanena kauntaya jagat viparivartate. So, Krishna is telling Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita that whatever is happening in this world, maya dakshena, my adhyaksha is there, my supervision is there. And under my supervision, everything is happening. And when a devotee, he feels stress, when a devotee goes through anxiety, basically he tells Krishna, oh Krishna, I don't have faith in you. When a devotee becomes sad in his life, he's telling Krishna, I don't have faith in you. Yes, if a devotee becomes sad and morose because he's not able to attain Krishna, that's valid sadness. That is valid hankering. That's valid lamentation. Oh Krishna, when will that day come, oh Lord? When will that day come and I'll attain you? Oh Lord, when will that particular day you come? When you'll keep your lotus hand on my head. Oh Lord, when will that day come when you'll embrace me? Oh Lord, when will that day come when I'll embrace your lotus feet? When will that day come? And when we cry thinking like this, then it's a valid tears coming from the eyes. And it's a valid prayer that we are offering. But when something happens in our life and when we cry out to the Lord, why are you doing this to me? What did I do? I was good only, no? Throughout my life, I'm doing good things only. Why are you doing this to me? I'm practicing bhakti. I'm chanting the holy names. And you say in Bhagavad Gita, Ananyas Chintayanto Maam Ye Jana Pariupasate Tesham Nityabhyuktanam yogakshemam vahamyam. You protect, you retain what I have and you carry what I like, but what are you doing? You're taking whatever I have. No, you're creating a turbulence in my life. All these statements just say that, oh Krishna, I don't have faith in your plan. I'm a devotee, but I don't have faith in your plan. This is what we are telling Krishna indirectly. We might not mean it, but you know, this is what is happening implicitly because of our behavior. Right? So that is the reason. See, now when you dive deep in Bhagavad Gita, you'll understand why Krishna is telling again and again, be sama, be equipoised, both in sadness and happiness. Don't go crazy because of this. I am there. I am there, Arjuna, I am there. So what if Arjuna says, okay, you are there, so what should I do now? Krishna says, tam titikshasva bharata. Tolerate. Just tolerate. And you'll see. You'll see the plan will unfold with time. You'll see. This is what Krishna says. So in this way, the Yamaraj is saying that we have firm belief that Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has given us protection even in the womb of the mother, will protect us everywhere. And I hope you know, you're clear about what happens in the womb of the mother. That's the most terrible situation the person is in. That's even more painful as compared to death. But still, Lord protects us from that and He brings us out of the womb of the mother. If He's protecting inside the womb of the mother, then don't we think that He'll protect us when we are there in this material world? But the only thing we have to understand is that protection which Lord gives is according to His plan and not according to our plan. Yes. So with this, I would like to stop here. And I purposely extended because we are doing it alternate days. So I thought, let me take 10-15 minutes more. So let me take questions. If you have any questions with today's discussion, please post. And also I would like to hear realizations of all of you all about faith aspect when it comes to the Lord. How this particular verse has helped us not to understand, to have faith in Krishna. Till then I'll take questions. Prabhuji, to Shastras, though Shastras say the same philosophy again and again, why is it still difficult to understand it and it's difficult to realize it? Prabhuji's attachment present between two souls. So even when philosophy is repeated again and again, why are we not able to believe in that philosophy? Maybe, you know, because we are not sincerely accepting or sincerely hearing, attentively hearing that particular philosophy. Or we might not be able to, or we are not sincerely and seriously practicing under the guidance of our superior, of our guru. We might not be executing the instructions given by our superior as it is. We might make some, you know, we might tweak in the instruction here and there and execute that. No, as it is. No, so automatically this happens. Is there an attachment present between two souls? Between soul and super soul, yes. But between two souls, very difficult. But yes, a guru and a disciple is attached. Apart from the guru and disciple's relationship, there is no relationship that is permanent when it comes to two souls. Okay, what's the next question? If we have an animal body, we are forced to act. Okay, this is privately messaged to me, so I'm reading that. Animal body, we are forced to act in such a way, then why, though we have a human body, we have desires of animals and not forced to act as human beings to search for Krishna? Is it too frustrating to have animal desires in human body? For many lifetimes, we have been animals. So, but obvious, even now we'll have animalistic desires, even in this human form. So, I think we've discussed this many of the time, that repeatedly we have been told that you're this, you're this, you're this, you're an animal, you're an animal. And that's what we've been doing, eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So we come in human form, we do the same thing. Till the point we come under the guidance of a bona fide guru, and the bona fide guru takes a hammer and then he just keeps hitting. And then finally, okay, I'm a human being. I will do what a human being is supposed to do. So that's what a guru does. And is it too frustrating to have animal desire? But obvious. See, when it comes to animal desire, eating, sleeping, mating, defending, they can do to fullest extent. Sleeping. Let's take, for example, sleeping. Now, suppose, now lockdown is going on and initially, many people are having free time. So suppose we say that, okay, let me sleep. How much time can we sleep? But when it comes to a tortoise, it goes to sleep for 300 years, hibernation. Now we cannot compete with tortoise. Eating, now suppose a feast is made. How much can we eat? our stomach will bloat, and maybe it will come till here, and maybe we might vomit. But when it comes to elephant, it's eating tons of food a day, tons of food. When it comes to mating, yes, same thing. When it comes to different animals, they go on continuously, but human beings cannot. Defending, same thing. Now, how much anxiety will a human being take? But a bird, every morsel that it puts in the mouth or every grain that it picks in the beak, it keeps looking around. So all the four activities are done very, very properly and to the fullest extent when it comes to animals. But when humans try to do that, and since human body is not meant to do those four activities exclusively, we get frustrated because we're not able to do it to the fullest. We're not able to sleep to the fullest, not able to eat to the fullest, not able to have enjoyment to the fullest, and not able to defend ourselves to the fullest. So we get frustrated. So it is frustrating. That is the reason lots of problems we face, which even animals don't face. Does a devotee who finally reaches Vaikuntha as a spiritual soul remembers anything about his past life? Yes, he remembers everything, which all body he has been through and what all he has faced. He also remembers the guru who has got him to Krishna consciousness, and he becomes very indebted to the guru who got him to Krishna consciousness. So he remembers everything. Does Godhead also has desire? If yes, then does it possible for him to stop the desire? When it comes to God, his desire is absolute. His desire is absolute. He desires and it manifests. For us, we desire and then it takes some time. Like for example, Krishna desired to manifest this world and it got manifested. Like in, I think in Bible it is said, Lord said, let there be a world, and the world manifested. So that's the difference between the desire of us and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And is it possible for him to stop the desire? Maybe when we meet him, when we go to Goloka, we can ask him, can you stop your desires? He all the time desires only one thing. When we will go back home back to Godhead. If he stops desiring that, then I think we will be in trouble. So he shouldn't stop desiring. I'm attached to many things around me, but I'm not able to get attached to Krishna, who is very, very close to my soul. It is very sad to know everything in the world, but not knowing something which is very close to us. Don't worry, that is what is the problem with all of us. So what we are supposed to do is that at least by understanding this, now we practice bhakti every single day, very nicely, intensely. And we increase our intensity, day by day by day. We don't slacken, basically. So, and with time, the attachment will come. What to do? See, currently, our mind is like a monkey or a hog. Now, I've been telling this in previous classes also. Even when there is rasgulla, the mind wants to eat stool. So that is what is the current situation of ours. But with time, when we do bhakti, the mind will get purified. And mind will understand its original, or we will understand our original state. And at that time, we'll not choose anything obnoxious. We'll always choose the best of the best sweet, that is Krishna. So it will take time. But we have to prove to Krishna that, oh Krishna, I want you this very lifetime. Enough is enough. No more births I am going to take. Why? Because I want to come back to you. And we just desire that. We take a strong conviction and we start practicing bhakti. Krishna has to fulfill. He has no option. He has no option because he is our eternal parent. And Prabhupada says, more than us desiring to go back home back to Godhead, Krishna has an intense desire to take us back home back to Godhead. What is lacking is we telling Krishna, I want to come back to you. That is lacking. And not artificially, it has to come from the heart. The intense desire should come from the heart. When that intense desire should, when it comes from the heart, Krishna will take us back home back to Godhead. There is no question of that. So till then, yes, intensely you have to practice bhakti and we have to change our materialistic desires to spiritual desires. And we will see the miracle, how Krishna reciprocates. I know modern science is bogus, but being in the field, I have a doubt from so long. That is, according to reproductive science, the embryo of 5 days is considered a baby because the cells that make up the baby are formed by the fifth day. Okay. And BioPSY, okay, is done on embryo to know if the baby will be having any disease. If mutated, it is discarded. Is it still abortion according to Shastra, since it is all done outside the female body in the labs? So if you're talking about artificial reproduction, the very deep things, you know, which I can speak, but I don't know how good that will be for me to speak. Maybe now in person, if someone asks me this question, I would like to take. But then, yes, one thing is there that the soul, when it comes through the semen of the father, and when the zygote is formed, so at that time the soul is already there. So the soul is already there, and we cannot forcefully remove the soul from that particular body. So that is the point now that is made. So this we have to understand at the subtler, at the spiritual end, or the spiritual level. So at the spiritual level, the soul has already, gone into the semen, and through the semen, without semen and the egg, they've got combined, and the embryo is formed. So the formation of embryo itself says the living entity is already there, in that embryo. If the living entity is not there, embryo cannot be formed, not possible. So that is the thing. So this is the principle. So now you can think about it. So, you know, is it wrong or is it right or no, whatever. Yes. Daily was better. No, let there be some hankering. You know, when we have alternate days, there'll be some hankering to come and hear Bhagavatam attentively. So, can we still do puja and chant when someone dies? Chanting and reading Bhagavatam, etc., should be continued. So that is, there are two marga. One is called as Bhagavat Marga, and one is called as Archana Marga. So Archana Marga should take a pause. Archana Marga basically means doing deity worship. So that has to take a pause. And the ones who have deities of Radha Krishna, Gaur Nithai, they should consult the superiors how to worship. But for normal public, you know, when it is just photos and other things, so they have to take a pause and halt the worship. But the Bhagavat Marga says chanting, reading, hearing. That has to continue. So we do both. We follow Bhagavat Marga and Archana Marga, and we do both the things simultaneously. Yes, when we are in the normal state. But when it comes to the critical state, that is Sutaka, at that time we stop the Archana and we just follow the Bhagavat Marga. So chanting shouldn't be stopped in any case. Any case, chanting shouldn't be stopped. Sometimes Mataji asks this question that, when we are not supposed to touch things because of our impure state, so can we chant? Yes, even during that time, the chanting should continue. What if during that time someone dies? That's the logic given in Shastra. So we should continue our chanting without fail, in any case. Okay, so we have a realization. Today I felt I received some message from Krishna as I'm so stressed out since long, and I was asking Krishna since so many months, why is he not doing anything to change my situation? Today he sent me a great message to keep faith on him. Yes, I'll wait for his plan to execute. Now I know my duty. I am so much satisfied with today's session. Oh, thank you very much. So please pray for me so that I also implement this. A question: is the remembrance carried in the soul or subtle body? And if remembrance is carried till Vaikuntha, isn't there a risk that soul may get tricked into the yearning for the past? See, when it comes to the soul, yes. Again, it's a deep concept. When it comes to the memory, that is stored in the subtle body. Okay. At the same time, the soul also retains the memory. Because, okay, let me put it like this first. So the subtle body has got the memory. Okay. And when the subtle body is removed and the soul gets liberated, goes back home back to Godhead, the soul is there in its natural state. That is Satchit Ananda. Chit means full of knowledge. So now when the soul is in full knowledge, so that knowledge is given by Krishna. Okay. And what knowledge is that? That knowledge is about everything that is there around and whatever the soul has gone through. Yes. So when the soul remembers whatever he has gone through in this material world, and when he attains Krishna, Chit Ghan, when he attains that Sachidananda Vigraha Swaroop of Krishna, so at that time he will not dare to desire anything apart from Krishna. That is the reason here, now every what to say, the test that is given by Krishna is intense. There's intense test and intense devotional service is expected. Why? And why is intense hankering expected to attain Krishna? Because that intense hankering when we have, and when we go back home, we'll never desire to come back to this world. So that is the reason Krishna will tweak in and smashes and, you know, remove the last bit in us, all the desires, sense gratificatory desires. Last drop will also fall from us, the sense gratification desires. And then when we are pure, Krishna says, now you're eligible. Now you can come. Right? So, like that. So, Krishna will make sure that all the purification will happen here itself. And when a person goes back home, there is not even a tinge of material desire. So, he can never come back to this material world. Okay, we have a realization. Okay, definitely this will strengthen our faith in Krishna and the perspective we have towards Krishna's will. I remember discussing with my office mates that we shouldn't have a plan B, which means we don't give our fullest to the plan A. But now I understand we shouldn't have a plan A, or in other words, plan A is Krishna's plan and we must work. This session will need a lot of meditation and contemplation. Okay, let me clear something. See, we have to make plans. Okay. Because we are mortal beings and we don't have full faith in Krishna, so we have to make plans. But the thing is, we shouldn't be attached to that plan. We have to make plan and tell Krishna that, Krishna, I've made this plan because I'm a mortal being. I have to make a plan. So I've made a plan and I'll try to execute this plan. But if you have, I'm sure you have a best plan. So you execute that plan and I'm ready to change my plan at any moment. Yes. So this session didn't say that don't make a plan. If you stop making a plan, you know, you'll go crazy. You'll go into anxiety. So we should have plan A, plan B, plan B till Z. We can have plans, no problem. But when Krishna's plan is getting executed, at that time, we shouldn't get bewildered. That is the point that I made in the session. Okay, hope this is clear. You know, please don't do some critical thing in your life by not making a plan. My realization from this session is that the yardstick to perceive a situation as favorable or unfavorable is not through the superficial material benedictions, but the fact that is increasing the intensity of my devotion or bringing me closer to Krishna. Yes, that is the ultimate realization. That's what our devotees have to realize through this session. Intensity of devotion will increase according to plan of Krishna. Faith is only thing that Krishna expects us. You always say that he has the best plan for us. Don't hurry. If we are with Hari, then there is no worry. Oh, Jay, today it's a nice line. I just knew about hurry and worry. Today we have different hurry also. Don't hurry. If we are with hurry, then there is no worry. Nice, Mataji. One realization that we are Gajendra suffering in the pool of material world, being eaten by crocodile. As soon as we are born, only as Gajendra offered Padma, even we should develop faith. The way to develop faith is to approach Sanjayas, like the devotees. By their mercy, we can attain Krishna. As you said, instruction from superiors. All glories to devotees. All glories to Radha Gopinath. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yes, that's a very nice thing, approaching devotees and taking instructions from them. There's a question. Explain a little more elaborately. When Indra came to hog body immediately, he was so attached and forced to act as a hog. But when a hog becomes a human being, why is it immediately not acting as human being in Krishna conscious? Like, duty of the human is to do devotional service. So see, when it comes to hog, I don't know if you'll be able to digest this, but the hog body, to come to hog body, there's a training given before that. The person is put into hell, and then there everywhere is only stool. And then initially he's sheath, hoo, etc., etc. But then later nothing is there to eat. He starts eating there, whatever is there around. And then finally he's ready to get a hog body. Then hog body is given. When it comes to Indra, it's a different case altogether, where Lord is personally putting him to illusion. So we cannot compare Indra's situation with our situation. So in Indra's situation, direct Lord's hand is there. In our situation, the hand of karma is there. So it's two different situations altogether. So when it comes to human being, the karma aspect which is there and the impressions which are there, that has to improve. And then we can actually become human beings. That is the reason Prabhupada said 16 rounds and 4 regulative principles, a person will become a human being. And after that, bhakti will start. That's what Prabhupada said. Okay, there's another question. Is it not true that we all fell down from Krishna's abode? If it is true, then how do we make sure we don't fall back again after going back? That's not our problem. That Krishna will take care. Yes, Krishna will take care, and obviously we will not desire not to come back to this material world. There's no doubt. Once bitten, twice shy. Something like that. Soul becomes omniscient upon entering Vaikuntha. Yes, you're absolutely correct. What to talk about attaining Vaikuntha? When the soul is here and when the soul becomes purified, I mean when the person becomes a pure devotee, he becomes omniscient. He's called as Trikala Darshi. He can see what happened in the past, he can see the present, and he can also see the future. So that is called as pure devotional service. So when a person becomes a pure devotee, he becomes omniscient. And then what to talk about people in Vaikuntha? They are but obvious, omniscient. Soul is Bindu, God is Sindhu, but super soul also God's energy. Why two sparks in one body? Alone soul or super soul enough to act? Okay, so see, super soul is also God. He's not God's energy. He's supreme being himself. Okay? And why is supreme being there with the soul? To give him directions. So two qualities of Paramatma, Anumanta and Upadrishta. Anumanta means the one who gives permission. Upadrishta means one who is watching out what we are doing. Yes. So he is like a person who is like a judge. He's seeing what we are doing, and he gives the judgment finally. So he is doing that particular thing when he's there in the body. So the super soul is with the soul with a purpose. The soul, super soul is trying to assist the soul to come back to him again. Right? So soul and super soul, they're not there to run this body. Running this body is not the goal of life. Going back home, back to God, is the goal of life. But the soul wants to come to this body and enjoy. So super soul says, okay, I'll also come with you because I have to give you directions to come back to me. So that is the reason soul and super soul are always together. Yes. And soul, super soul, Paramatma, he gives directions to Jivatma. That is the reason this Lord is there within us also. Okay. Nice that you understood. Okay, there's a realization whether condition is favorable or unfavorable, but I should always be in favor of Krishna's service and chant Hare Krishna irrespective of situations. Yes, that's what it's all about. My realization is that sense gratification is what stops devotee from getting towards Krishna. Absolutely correct. The desire for sense gratification stops us getting closer to Krishna. Okay. One provoke that we can make is that without Krishna, we are a whole. With Krishna, we are whole. You people should give classes now. Enough of attending classes. You people have all punchlines nowadays. Yes. Yes. So with Krishna, we are whole because Krishna is whole. Okay. So you are correct. Okay.